If you experience anxiety, you are far from alone. In fact, our next guest says anxiety is a common human experience, even though we don't always recognize it for what it is. And while it may affect people differently, there is some good news. We can learn to re-channel anxiety and use it as a force for good in our lives. In her new book, our guest shares a lot of strategies to help us understand our anxiety, find out what triggers it, and to help retrain our brains to live better with it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What causes you to feel anxiety? Do you have things you do to help you deal with it? Has it taken time to figure that out? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Wendy Suzuki is a professor of neuroscience and psychology in the Center for Neuroscience at New York University. She's an authority on neuroplasticity and mental health. Her new book is called Good Anxiety, Harnessing the Power of the Most Misunderstood Emotion. Wendy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I wanted to ask you first about the scope of anxiety in the United States when we include people with, you know, clinically diagnosable anxiety and people who have maybe not that level, but where anxiety is affecting their lives. How common is this?
Very, very common. Even before the pandemic started, 90% of Americans raised their hands and said that they experience anxiety very, very commonly. And that has only gone up. So basically all of us have anxiety. But as you point out, there's a wide spectrum of anxiety, from clinical anxiety, which is a different beast that needs medical attention, just like a broken leg would. My book focuses on the lower levels of severity of anxiety, what I call everyday anxiety, but that covers a huge swath of the American population these days.
It's kind of a twist here. I think a lot of people will have to, and I had to, stop and think about this, the idea that anxiety isn't in and of itself a bad thing, that there are things we can do, and we'll talk about what those things are, to use anxiety for a force for good in our lives. Can you make the case that it's worth taking the time to recalculate our thoughts about anxiety?
Absolutely. The reason why everybody needs to recalculate their views on anxiety is because high levels of chronic anxiety lead to high levels of chronic stress hormone cortisol in your system. We know that it's very bad for your physiological system. It can affect your heart, your digestive system, even your long-term reproductive systems are affected. And also, my specialty, the brain. Long-term high levels of stress hormones, cortisol, can first damage the input structures to brain cells called neurons. And then eventually, with really high levels that continue for a long time, can actually kill brain cells in two key brain areas, the hippocampus, critical for memory, and the prefrontal cortex, critical for decision making. Those are areas that you want to preserve for as long as you can. So this is why everybody should learn how to harness their anxiety to do good things in their lives.
I want to dig into one key concept that's going to let us help do that. Brain plasticity or neuroplasticity. What do we mean by that?
Brain plasticity is the brain's amazing ability to respond to the external environment. It can respond in a positive way by learning new things, taking advantage of creativity to solve problems and to respond in a positive way to things like physical activity, meditation, good sleep that you provide the brain. Brain plasticity can also go in the negative direction. And the best example there is high levels of chronic stress can damage the brain for the long term. So we have the capacity to change our brains and make it stronger and better. And one of the things that we can do is decrease stress turning down the volume on our anxiety. And that can lead to a more creative and productive life.
We're talking to Wendy Suzuki about her new book. It's called Good Anxiety, Harnessing the Power of the Most Misunderstood Emotion. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about anxiety, what it is, how we know what it is, what it does to our brains? Have you come up with strategies in your life that let you deal with long-term or short-term anxiety yourself. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Wendy, your book is full of concrete suggestions for figuring out our anxiety, what it is, what it does to us, and then how to deal with it. Let's start with the first step, recognizing anxiety. I've dealt with anxiety for years. Only in the last couple of years did I know what to call it. How do we start to see how it is affecting our lives?
Yeah, that's a great point. So my simple definition of anxiety is that feeling of fear or worry that often accompanies uncertain situations. So that is kind of a clear definition of our life today with the coronavirus pandemic. It introduces so much uncertainty, and that has really increased our level of anxiety. But do you have that fear or your worry, whether you acknowledge it or you do like I've learned that I do all the time, which is kind of mask it and just ignore it. Mm-hmm. That is anxiety, and you want to put it in check. Make sure you understand it and are kind of using it to your best advantage, because it is a human emotion. It was evolved to protect us, even though it's not protecting us right now because its volume is too high. And that's why we really want to start to pay attention to it in a new way.
I want to talk about that idea of anxiety as something that evolved as a positive tool. Did I just see a tiger in the bushes over there or a snake or whatever? Anxiety can be a pretty good thing that gives me the energy and impetus I need to do something about it, right?
Absolutely. Even more than a good, pretty good thing, it is essential for our survival. We evolved the emotion of anxiety to kind of put us on edge and get us into action if we needed action. If we relied on our own decision-making skills, you know, sometimes maybe you do want to run away from the lion, sometimes you don't feel like it, and bam, you know, you're gone. So that, you know, you can imagine if you were somebody living 2.5 million years ago, it is essential. But jump to our present day, and we have things that provoke our anxiety that don't come along every once in a while. It's several times an hour. With the weather report can produce anxiety. The news feed, the social media feed, all are inducing anxiety. And these are all the things that are turning the volume up on our anxiety. And you know, too much of anything, even a good thing, is bad. And that is why our current kind of societal level of high levels of anxiety has lost its protective element. And so the first step in my book is learning how to turn it down.
Let's talk about figuring out maybe the unhealthy responses to anxiety we have. You've got some quizzes in your book. And I love that you do this in a very non-judgmental way, by the way, of saying, what negative behaviors does my anxiety drive me to that feel good in the short run, maybe, but over time they're bad?
Yes.
How do we start to spot those?
Well, you know, just start to list them. Also, I try to be not non-judgmental. You try and be non-judgmental on yourself. So I'll just use some of my own examples of anxiety coping strategies. They always involved sugar. So brownies, ice cream, a nice cold beer at the end of the day. Every once in a while, those things are great. But if I turn to those things every single time I feel anxious, that could lead quickly to rapid weight gain and not feeling so good overall. So what are some of those things in your life? Just to start, awareness is so key in this book. Awareness of your own anxiety, awareness that anxiety at its core is good. That is a really important, but it takes some time to wrap your head around that. But all of these awarenesses will lead to towards what I call good anxiety.
We're talking to Wendy Suzuki, professor of neuroscience and psychology in the Center for Neuroscience at New York University. We're talking about her new book. It's called Good Anxiety, Harnessing the Power of the Most Misunderstood Emotion. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions, maybe your experiences at 800-642-1234. Have you been more anxious over this last year and a half? A lot of reasons for that, I think. How have you tried to deal with that? Have you found, stumbled across, or read about a good strategy that helps you deal with anxiety in a healthy way? Do you have a question about the brain science behind anxiety? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation, get more strategies on dealing with our anxiety coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about anxiety and how we can actually use it for good and grow from it. Our guest is Wendy Suzuki, a neuroscientist from New York University. We're talking about her new book. It's called Good Anxiety, Harnessing the Power of the Most Misunderstood Emotion. You could join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. Was there a time in your life where you felt like anxiety was getting the better of you day to day? How did you come out of it? If you came out of it, do you have advice maybe to share with others or a question about how anxiety works? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Wendy, we just talked about, you know, spotting the things that our anxiety triggers us to do. Let's take the next step now. When we're in that rut, when we've carved out that neural pathway that says anxiety equals the sugary treat or the drink or the road rage or whatever it might be, how do we start crafting that new path in a better direction?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the first step that I would take is to focus on the anxiety itself rather than the response to the anxiety. So I spent a lot of time coming up with a wide range of really doable tools to decrease the volume on our anxiety. And the very first tool that I give to everybody everywhere is breath, deep breath work. And did you know that breathing deeply is literally activating a part of your nervous system that is designed to de-stress you? Everybody's heard of the fight or flight response that comes with anxiety, that feeling of nervousness that is getting you ready to either fight the lion or run away. Did you know that there is an equal and opposite part of the nervous system that was designed to bring you back to normal states after stress? And this is what literally what you are activating when you breathe deeply. This system does slow down your breathing. So this is something you can do consciously. It has an immediate effect on your feeling of anxiety. You can do it with your kids. You can do it in the middle of a conversation that is causing you anxiety. So it's a very powerful tool.
Another common theme in your book, Wendy, is kind of our self-talk, I guess, how we think in our brains about the problem that's causing or problems that are causing us stress and anxiety. How do we reframe those from negative, bad, self-judgmental ways of talking to more positive ways that are going to help help decrease that anxiety?
Yeah. I think I talk about something that's called the negativity bias in my book. So the negativity bias is something all humans have. When given an array of good and bad things, particularly about yourself, what do? You focus on that one comment that one person said that, you know, said that your talk was terrible when everybody else said it was great. And you focus on that. And it comes out in other ways. In meetings, one has to be very careful about the negative comments that one makes about a candidate or something being evaluated, because that has a lot more weight than a positive thing that you might say. We are just biased towards that. It is partially a protective mechanism, but it's partially recognizing that in ourselves. I actually was just called out for doing that to myself the other day by friends. And I thought, oh my God, I'm doing it to myself. One of the things that I found really helpful is I've had the opportunity to work with coaches career coaches, and they are so great at stepping back and really seeing both the best aspects of you and also the parts that need work, but couching it in a positive light. Can you learn to be your best coach? And even if you haven't had a coach, everybody has a friend that has that positive outlook. And so you can use that friend as a model to turn in on yourself and ask yourself, am I being that negative bias self, or am I being the good coach self? And that is a wonderful thing to practice.
Talking to Wendy Suzuki about her new book, Good Anxiety, Harnessing the Power of the Most Misunderstood Emotion. You could join in with your questions, maybe your experiences at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Wendy, it's interesting to me that people aren't calling in, and I think that may mean something. Are we too reluctant in some cases? I understand people might not want to do it on a radio show, but are we too reluctant to talk about something that's going on in our minds, like anxiety? Is that part of our problem?
Absolutely. In fact, with all the people I've talked to since the publication of this book, I've noticed that there's a lot of shame around the emotion of anxiety. And part of the book, and part of the reason I wrote the book, was an invitation to start the conversation. Why? Because 90% of Americans identified as anxious even before the pandemic. So basically, every single person in the room right now is feeling this feeling of anxiety. There's nothing to be shameful about. Everybody has this emotion. It is part of the human emotional spectrum. And so, while I totally understand that it takes a little while to wrap your head around that, there still is a lot of shame around anxiety. And so, you know, I shared all of my anxieties. You'll read all about them in my book. They're very common ones. And I was an anxiety denier, I learned while writing this book. I like to kind of hide the anxiety from the outside world. But I got over that because now I've written about it and everybody can learn about all of my anxieties in this book.
I think sometimes people might think of anxiety as being irrational, maybe. But I can think of a lot of rational reasons for people to be anxious about stuff. Am I going to get the job? Am I going to find a life partner? Hey, there's this pandemic. I'm worried about that. How do we deal with very reasonable anxieties in our lives so that they don't overwhelm us from minute to minute?
Well, I think that's a great question. And I would say that one of the tools that I think is so powerful in this book is the tool of mindset. How are you thinking about this? So instead of worrying about a job, your promotion, that is critical. And beating yourself up and saying, what's the matter with me? I can't get over this. Think about that emotion, that worry and that fear that might come with worrying about your job as a little sign or a big sign saying, this is something important. Pay attention to me. And that starts to make sense. That is useful. That is protective. Now, again, you can't do much if you're, in depths of anxiety. So that is why I gave so many tools to turn that volume down. But it's never going to go away. And that is the signal that I hear is a signal telling me, this is something that is important, or this is something that has worried me or scared me since I was a young child. And so I talk about my social anxiety that I had. I've gotten over it because I'm a professor, so I can speak, no problem. But I still have anxiety in social situations. And that came from years of, of suffering from social anxiety as a shy, awkward kid.
Let's go to our callers now. George is with us in Ashland. George, hi.
Good afternoon. I was listening to your conversation as I'm mowing the lawn here in Ashland. And it struck me that if a person identifies or identity is tied up with the thoughts going around in their heads, they're going to suffer more anxiety than if they just realize that their brain is going to spit out a lot of stuff that is not them, that they don't have to identify with. It may make a difference for them.
That's interesting, George. So we don't have to identify ourselves. We are not our anxiety, he's saying, I think, Wendy.
I love that. I think that's a great way to think about it. A wonderful mindset shift, that those thoughts of worry are not me. That is something that I do because I'm a human, and I'm a human that has the emotion of anxiety. Great mindset tool.
George, thanks for that call. Nicole joins us now in Eau Claire. Nicole, hi.
Hi. This is a question for you about middle school, upper elementary students and some techniques for getting them to flip their self-talk or their mindset when they're sort of maybe above the idea of I'm going to breathe because people have been just telling me to breathe since I've been five, you know, or, you know, looking in the mirror and giving yourself that sort of like pep talk with, you know, without actually making them think you just want to see them smile and say nice things.
Interesting. Nicole, great question and a great time to develop good self-talk habits, I imagine, Wendy.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, there are so many different ways to do it. There are looking in the mirror, as you say, there are mantras that you can do. One of my favorite forms of exercise that I actually teach is a form of exercise called Intensati, that every single movement that you do is associated with a positive spoken affirmation. So there's jumping jacks and you say, I believe I will succeed during the jumping jacks or front punches that are associated with the saying, I am strong now. So there's a lot of fun ways to get your kids to kind of enact these take in these positive comments about themselves. And I bring this up because I've done this with kids. I've done this with adults. I've taught it for 7 years for free at NYU. And there's nothing like, you know, shouting out these positive things with a whole bunch of other sweaty affirmation shouting people. You feel a little silly at first, but you feel really good. And I've had parents and their kids send me videos of them doing the same affirmations that I've put on Vimeo. And they say that they do it every morning together. So that might be an idea for you.
Thanks for the call, Nicole. I want to take our last half a minute or so, Wendy. One of my favorite bits of advice from your book is being creative as a tool to decrease anxiety. Leave us with a plug for that, please.
Yeah. So creativity is really part of the tools that you'll use to shift your mindset. There are literally hundreds of ways to approach the same situation. But sometimes that anxiety-provoking situation that's always provoked anxiety, you feel like there's only one way, there's only one outcome. So the book encourages you to use your creative mind to come up with five different ways to change that, to approach it in a different way, to end it in a different way, to make the middle different. And in doing that, you start to see the power of mindset shift and you start to kind of practice that positive brain plasticity, that learning of your creative muscle, brain muscle, that will help you address your anxiety situations in a new way. And you're bound to find a way that will lower your anxiety levels.
Wendy, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Wendy Suzuki from New York University. We've been talking about her new book. It's called Good Anxiety, Harnessing the Power of the Most Misunderstood Emotion.